Coming of Age, celebrating 20 years of sin.
Adam Collins, your first radio on-air experience was on 90.7 Sin FM, was it not?
Believe the hype on Sin 907 with Colo Branners and Connor coming at you on this Saturday morning. Yeah, it was. I think we did, were they called Two Blocks? Was that the
Programming Blocks.
Programming Blocks in 2006-07, I reckon it might have been. Where we had the time-honored spot or the coveted spot of 6 a.m. till 8 a.m., which usually meant getting home from the Rotchie at about 3:30 in the morning after a big Friday night, a couple of hours kip on the couch, get a cab to Sin. I was living in East Melbourne at the time, so I wasn't far away. So I got a cab on the way in, pick up the Herald Sun and the Age, do about 20 minutes of prep. By that, I mean work out what from the newspaper we were going to pluck out. At the time, it was kind of what Ben Cousins' story was going to get a run. And what we mostly focused on was the music we were playing. We were quite we were quite fond of ourselves in terms of the sort of stuff we were playing at that time of the morning. So, I was petrified when we first started doing it, but I didn't realise, of course, that it would go on to become a pretty big part of my life, being a broadcaster these days.
But, of course, from what I know about your story, Adam, is your first encounter with the radio station wasn't necessarily signing up to go on air. It was you were a listener and you rang in and asked one of the presenters out, am I not mistaken?
This is absolutely true. So Ryan Mason and Brett Collett had a show called Track One, Side One, two good friends of mine from watching the footy. And by listening to that, I had 90.7 tuned into the car radio. And when I would drive home from cricket on a Saturday evening, as you would do back when this was more of a thing to do, I'd flick through the station, see what song was played. And the music being played on a Saturday evening was really good. So by extension, I was listening to the show, which was co-hosted by Connor Ayres, who, and I think it was called, I can't remember what the program was called. Was it called Is It Just Me, possibly? Was that the name of the show, possibly?
I can't remember either.
I don't know why that rings a bell. But anyway, it was a dating program. And basically, Connor and Vaya would tell, if I recall correctly, their dating stories and give advice and that kind of thing. And I just was like captivated by Connor, by her on-air persona. So I thought, fuck it. I'm just going to drop a line to the show. They had like a Hotmail account or something, saying that I really enjoyed their show. And I basically, without having any knowledge of who she was, other than having spoken to Ryan, I think, and Brett possibly, and asked them if they knew who she was, said, basically, will you come and get a drink with me? And I think we were probably living together 6 months later. It didn't last the test of time. We did break up a couple of years on from that. We're still friends these days, albeit peripherally. We've got families and live in different countries and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was a Sin romance at the start.
That's kind of like original Tinder, because this is pre-Tinder, and I guess you couldn't even look Connor up on Facebook, or Facebook was in their infancy.
This was this would have been late 2005. So, I mean, I don't remember what probably MySpace, but even that I don't think was until maybe 06 or 07 or something like that. So, yeah, there was no way of like sort of face stalking, as the term became known, her or anything like that. It was purely down to her being wonderful on the radio and me thinking, gee, she's so cool, so interesting, so funny. I must get to know this person. I wasn't long out of it, like kind of my first university relationship, I guess, and didn't think much of it. I think I might have even set up a fake email account, but not my actual email account to do it at a pinch. I reckon that might have been just to give myself a bit of distance if it backfired on me. But I reckon she agreed to meet up with me because it was good content for the show, right? One thing led to another. We had this sort of wonderful, as I remember it, wonderful whirlwind romance around the Christmas, New Year of 2005, 2006. And it was all on the back of listening to a show because I had other mates who'd been on Sin.
And, of course, you ended up on air with Yours Truly, because the old Kicking Behind show had a rotating panel. And I've spoken to a few people from that era about the show, and basically because it was a footy show, we've kind of come to the conclusion that while we like to get nostalgic about footy back in our day, that particular era of mid-2000s football was fucking awful.
I guess it was. Yeah, I hadn't really considered it in those terms, but it was always a pleasure when you gave me the tap on the shoulder, because I met you through your dad, yeah. And I met your dad through Connor, who was working with him in her day job at the time at Vega and Nova. So it was kind of this nice progression through to you. And you were probably still in high school maybe then, probably?
I think I would have just finished. Just about to finish, yeah.
Yeah, because I attended your 18th birthday party. I remember that when your dad was DJing. You know, and nice how it goes full circle. I was a groomsman of yours recently. Anyway, so you invited me on with Tim from time to time, and I used to love doing that. I remember coming on the day before, like the grand final preview show for 2007, the Geelong Port Adelaide grand final, and I boldly declared there'd be a boil over and Port Adelaide would win. That was me hoping that the Geelong wouldn't win a flag, because I suppose my sense of rivalry between Hawthorn and Geelong was heightened at that stage. Little did I know that Hawthorn would beat Geelong in the grand final the year later. But yeah, loved coming on Kicking Behinds and all the various rubbish we would talk, especially around your Robert Walls impersonation.
Robert Walls used to just come on the show randomly anytime he wanted.
That undisciplined Shane Strimple needed to be shorted out.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because obviously Wallsy hates Essendon, and there's all the schmozzle at Essendon recently with the coach selection, and Robert Walls was on the committee to pick the new Essendon coach.
Was he?
And I think I was saying to either Tim Brown, my co-host, or Ronnie Lerner, or a few others that used to be involved, is like, that's a sketch we would have done 15 years ago.
I hope they did it at the Telstra Dome. Football's always better.
He loves the football there. It's just faster. The game goes better. You see, Kevin Sheedy, what's Robert Wall's doing here anyway? Is there any particular skills you took on board? Because you had a very interesting career path. So you obviously dabbled in a bit of sin, and you were more focused on political life. When I knew you, it was sort of the year 2007. It was an election year. You were out in the hustings for, at the time, Kevin 07 and the Labor campaign back then. And then all of a sudden, a year later, you're doing sin, and the next year you're in the year of the Prime Minister. Was there anything you took from that in terms of communication skills or anything?
Probably. I was probably unclear for a couple of years in my early 20s which direction I wanted to go, media or politics, and tried to dabble in both. So I did a little bit of television stuff with Channel 9 the last year. They had the footy in 06, which was fun, but I didn't really know how to take that to the next level. Little bit of tennis in there as well, but it was politics that kept dragging me back in as a staffer, as an activist inside the Labor Party. And you're right. So in 2007, was on the Kevin 07 campaign. I went to work in the PM's office after we won that election. So any interest in broadcasting went out the window, because, you know, when you have a job like that, it's taboo to have your own profile. It's very much about slipping into line with your boss. So I had a Twitter account, I suppose, later, but I would never dare to have spoken politics on there. It was all about footy and cricket and that kind of thing. But I'm sure that the technical skills, even learning how to panel and understanding how a radio show is put together, as much of that would have been by osmosis through Connor as it would have been, because she was a breakfast radio producer. So I was observing her routine and had a box seat to her life when she was working with Nova and Vega. So I think that by the time I reached Canberra and was working as a media advisor to Rudd, and then ultimately a long-term staffer to Wayne Swan when he was Treasurer and Deputy Prime Minister, I understood the hustle and bustle of commercial radio and how it worked and how it was put together. And those skills have served me well moving back into broadcasting, however long it was now, and having that career path myself.
And it wasn't quite sin where you sort of started your cricket commentary career, but it was a similar kind of setup with the old White Line Wireless with, of course, Jeff Lemon, your podcast co-host and on-air partner in crime these days. And, you know, to be fair, some major TV networks are showing the same model as White Line Wireless with their Big Bash broadcasts. But it was sort of like this other training ground you got, but you may have had that. It was a bit like doing sin again. When we were, because I got involved as well, and we'd be calling cricket matches very late at night in someone's share house describing what's happening on the TV.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It did feel like I was back doing sin again, because to an extent doing pirate radio, and that's what it was, you've got training wheels, because you know that you're not being paid for it. There's no, it's not high stakes in the same way that sin was a great training ground for a lot of high school students or people early university where, you know, if they fucked up, it was going to be okay. They would simply play. You'll have to remind me, what was the song you'd play if it dropped out? There was a track that would automatically come on.
It was Hurricane by Faker.
That's right.
Totally Addicted to Bass also had a stint. And I think there was a Good Charlotte song that if you heard that meant the station was off air.
I mean, that was the worst case scenario, right? You put the station off air and that would happen. The same applied for White Line Wireless in those heady days of 2014 when I just left politics, you know, a year before at the 2013 election, came back to Melbourne, had this idea that cricket could do with an alternative cricket commentary, which Jeff had concurrently had. I'd lived in the UK before then on the Olympic Games in 11-12 and had seen a similar kind of broadcast go big, and Jeff and I came together at that juncture, and yeah, before we knew it, that was a pretty big deal. Like, I remember that 2016 T20 World Cup where you were with us, Dylan, we had up to 40,000 listeners one night, which is not for nothing, right? It's a pretty significant thing when you're calling the cricket off the telly from India with no sound effects from a couch in a house that's owned by the Freemasons and the rent hadn't gone up for 11 years and there was 12 bedrooms there. It was a very odd radio studio. But yeah, that got me on the path to having a proper grown-up broadcasting life on radio and telly. It wasn't because of White Line Wireless that I got to do those things, but it didn't hurt that I had been able to build up the air miles a little bit. I wasn't coming into it cold like a lot of people when they start doing cricket for the first time. It is the first time they've commentated anything, whereas I've done it for a number of series off the telly and had some degree of comfort.
And I seem to recall during our stint on Sin, or my stint on Sin, particularly with the Kicking Behinds program, we had this ongoing joke that Sin was going to bid for the rights for the footy, because at the time the footy TV rights were up and it was on for young and old when basically Channel 7 moved heaven and earth to get the football back, because they lost it. Because there's a whole generation that don't remember Channel 9 broadcasting football these days. But yeah, 7 lost it for about 5 years and did everything they could. And we started this sort of on-air campaign to try and raise like $1 billion to buy the rights or something ridiculous. And we got a shout out to the Herald Sun. But you, later on in life, you just bought the rights to a cricket test series yourself to broadcast.
That's true. I remember back when Nine and, well, what was then Fox Footy and Channel 10 came together, it was the consortium bid whatever it was to get the rights between 2002 and 2006. And yeah, you're right. In 07, it was about how could Channel 7 find a dance partner? And they found one in 10. They jettisoned Fox Footy for a number of years and it came full circle eventually. But yeah, there was a time. And whether implicitly that planted the seed with me, I'm not really sure. But you're right that years on, around that White Line Wireless time, kind of when I was starting to get grown-up commentary gigs on radio in Australia and in the UK and around the world in places like, I guess, the Caribbean, in India, in Sri Lanka, pretty much wherever Australia were playing, I was getting on radio doing commentary on the local station, which was a really good way of, again, sort of developing my air miles and developing some credibility in the industry. And then, 2018, long story short, there was the Sandpaper series in South Africa. I was on commentary on SEN when Cameron Bancroft pulled the sandpaper out of his pocket and tampered with the ball, and the rest is kind of history. Press fast forward, I guess it would have been 5 or 6 months, and their next test series that they were playing was in the UAE against Pakistan. And I just got the sense that nobody was going to broadcast it. I just kind of, I didn't know for sure, but the smoke signals were such that I couldn't see how there was going to be a radio broadcast. I couldn't quite fathom how that would be. It made sense editorially, given the time of year, but it felt like there should be something. And I suppose based on the same reasons that we started White Line Wireless, that really started before I arrived in 2013 when the ABC didn't go to India for that test series, which is the one that I'm going out to later this week, as it happens, for SEN. 10 years later. But yeah, that's where it started, the idea there should be some radio commentary. So I kind of blagged my way into calling the Pakistan Cricket Board and offering them a fairly derisory amount of money. They came back with a much higher number. I explained to them, look, guys, it's a buyer's market. You're not getting an offer if it's not me. We came kind of not quite halfway. They agreed to my deal, which when you include the commentary team that I put together, which had people like Mike Hussey, Brendan Julian, Buzzard Khan, like, you know, former international cricketers on it. Jeff, who I worked with for a long time by that stage, was my other ball-by-baller. That was a house deposit worth of money, which I've been saving up to buy a house with my now fiance here in London. And she didn't perhaps quite know the degree of risk that was underneath all of that. But long story short, we made it work. It was a brilliant experience over there. I managed to sell enough advertising to make the money back. Everybody got paid and we lived to fight another day. And yeah, it's quite a good story that, I mean, weirdly is currently being made into a film by a couple of different film houses optioned that story because there was a radio documentary made about it a couple of years ago. And yeah, it's a great yarn. But yeah, I do think a little bit of it comes back to those conversations around community radio. And well, in the absence of, in this particular case, a commercial or a national broadcaster doing it, well, why can't we step in? Why can't we step in with a more homespun version of it and it ended up being a great success?
And before I let you go, it's one observation I make through the other people I've been chatting with to celebrate this 20-year anniversary is, of course, you end up working with people from Sin throughout your working life. And, I mean, your current EP at SEN Cricket, Mitchell Scott, is an ex-Sinner and was very much heavily involved in Sin as well.
Yeah, well, Mitch has been we didn't cross paths in Sin days, but Mitch is he is one of the best people I've ever worked with in any field, be it you know, sort of senior political ranks or other broadcasts around the world. Mitch is an absolute gun. He must be the most organised bloke I've ever come across, and has a real sense of the story. And I think with cricket especially, like, you've got so much time to fill across 7 hours each day. If you're just dealing in what's happening in the 22 yards in the middle, it may not make for particularly compelling radio, but Mitch has always got an eye to that, and we've built a great team in the last few years. And yeah, I'm always coming across people in my life at one form or another. I've done a radio block, I've done a show, and yeah, I'm just so grateful that I had the chance to be involved in that early formative stage of my life, and pleased that it's played a role in helping me do what I do these days.
Adam Collins, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, Dylan. A joy to be back on Sin with you.
Coming of age, celebrating 20 years of Sin.